on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Cricket, lovely cricket. Cricket lick the ball.
Welcome along to 98 Not Out with me, Darren Mutsu. Hope you've had a great week and are ready for an hour of cricketing madness, as always. Busy show tonight. We've got a preview of the England versus India Test Series, which has got underway early this morning. We should be talking to Rahul Patil from sportsbeat.co.nz about his thoughts of what we can expect from the five test matches. There's also news of success for Billericay's Paul Walter at the Big Bash in Australia. There's more news from around the counties. There's music, there's chat. You know the score.
Lovely cricket. Got to lick the ball before it reached the wicket.
As always, I've got to say a big hi to Dan Hagger, who will be coming back on the show in the very near future to talk about everything Essex. In the meantime, let's get into it. It's cricket birthdays of the week. And as always, there's the usual veritable smorgasbord of people celebrating their birthdays. We'll start off with Simon Towful, who's 53, Jamie Dalrymple, 43, Stuart Meeker, 35, Ian Salisbury, 54, the great Johnny Barclay, 70, Glenn Chappell, raise your bat, at 50, West Indies Lendl Simmons, 39, Chiteshwar Pujara hits 36, friend of the show David Painter, 43, again old son, Kim Hughes, 70, Chaminda Vass, 50, Daniel Vittori, 45, and from the Daily Mail, cricket writer Paul Newman, 58, Dean Headley, 54, and Mark Pugach, 56. And a special happy birthday greetings to listeners Peter Olding, 57, Aaron Dexter, 40, and Mike Elson, 57. Remember, if you want to be part of Cricket Birthdays of the Week, email me, radio@phoenixfm.com, and let me know whose birthday it is, how old they are, and if you want, just a little bit about them.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
That's right, you're listening to Phoenix FM, a 98 on the FM dial in the central Essex area, via the internet, phoenixfm.com, or you can shout at your smart speaker to play Phoenix FM. Many ways to listen in. And of course, if you haven't got time right now, you can download the show later on. Just head to phoenixfm.com, look under programs, search for 98 Not Out, and you can listen back whenever you want. Right, when you get to my grand old age, Friday nights take on a different turn. These days spent indoors watching BBC Four and old editions of Top of the Pops. And last week they were in 1987, and this one was played, and my word, it took me back. 1987. That's Donna Summer and a track called Dinner with Gershwin.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Right, England are back in test action after a gap of 6 months, unbelievably. Of course, they're out in India, and the first test got underway. But ahead of that, I caught up with Rahul Patil to just get what his thoughts were ahead of a mighty series between two of cricketing's giants. With England's tour to India underway, I thought it would be good to get the thoughts of our friend Rahul Patil, who we last heard of just after the World Cup in India. He's now back in his hometown of Wellington, and I just thought I'd get his thoughts on what we can expect. Rahul, how are you doing?
Very good, Darren. And very, very warm welcome from Wellington. 28 and 29 degrees heat in Wellington these couple of days. So, yeah, really enjoying the summer here.
Yeah, it's the absolute opposite over here in England. We've had freezing temperatures and then storms to deal with. But summer will be coming soon, no doubt. So, England are in India, a five-test series. This is, for me, after going to... visiting Australia, this one would probably be right up there on the list. What are your thoughts on what we can expect?
Oh, just brilliant to have five test match series, actually, because it's quite a rarity nowadays. Obviously, you've got the Ashes, which is played over five test matches, but not a lot of other series go that long. So it's good, very exciting, and something about cricket played in whites and with the red ball. So that's also very, very exciting. As you can see, I've got my lovely India test jersey out today. But now, very excited and should be a good series between two teams that are playing some very good test cricket at the moment.
It was an absolute classic 10 years ago when Alistair Cook was at his absolute peak and Kevin Peterson and Andrew Strauss as well. I'm not sure we're going to see a repeat of that this time with the current England lineup.
No, and it's funny how often that series gets mentioned, because the last time that a team came and dominated India at home was that England team. And since then, England have been to India twice, and on both occasions, they've had to face defeat. But yeah, that team was special because you had players who just were the perfect fit for the conditions. You had the grinder in Alistair Cook. You had the flashy Kevin Peterson, who was dominating and was ready to take an attack to the bowlers. And you had fantastic spinners in Monty Panesar and Graham Swan, who bowled beautifully in that series to trounce the Indians on their home ground, which not a lot of teams have managed to do. This team, though, very, very different to that, as you rightly said. And it's going to be interesting, because I think one of the things that's happened since then is that there's been a lot of criticism of the kind of surfaces that India has provided for visiting teams. And I've got my own take on that. I think the World Test Championship is great in the manner that it's given relevance to test cricket again, and it's brought back that interest into that five-day game. But what it's done at the same time is that it's put a very high onus on winning at home. And in that effort to win at home, I think sides have sometimes really pushed the boundaries as to what kind of surfaces they provide, and home advantage is becoming a massive, massive advantage that teams want to take to the max.
Yeah, I mean, India seems to get labelled with this quite badly, but I mean, I think England are just as guilty of creating green tops to suit their seamers. So, yeah, it's a good point that home advantage does seem to be probably a bit too much emphasis and onus put on sides these days.
Yeah, and we saw the last, I don't know if you saw the last test series between South Africa and India. And we got an absolute shocker of a pitch at Newlands. And that test lasted all of 642 deliveries or something like that it was. So yeah, I mean, after the test series, it was quite interesting to see what Rohit Sharma said, and he said, "I don't mind playing on surfaces like this, as long as people don't come to India and complain about tracks that turn from day one." And you didn't quite know whether he was just being speaking his mind, or it was some indication as to the kind of surfaces that we could expect for this England series. So it'll be quite interesting to see what sort of surfaces we get. I just think that if India produce surfaces that are good for batting on days 1, 2, and 3, and then start turning late into day 3 and 4 and 5, I think man for man, the Indian team is actually a better side. And on good wickets, Indian spinners should be able to out bowl their counterparts from England, and Indian batters should be able to outbat the batters from England as well. So I just think that if they produce fair and reasonable pitches, they should win that way easily either. The problem is when you have an absolute turner from ball one, it basically takes skill out of the equation. You make the match into a lottery, and you know, then it's anybody's game, like India has found out against Australia, where the Australian spinners came in and bowled better than the Indian spinners on a surface, and Australia got their solitary win in that series that recently happened. So yeah, very interesting times.
Also interesting that you mentioned this recently concluded series in South Africa. It was just such a shame that it was only two games, because I think this should be something that should be looked at. We need to stop this two test series, because you need a bit of jeopardy in there. If you make them a minimum of three, five is fantastic amongst the big guys, but certainly I would have thought between India and also with South Africa, kind of at a turning point. I think that was the last South African side that we'll see of that strength for quite a while, given the priorities now given to franchise cricket. But it would have been nice to have seen a third test. So just really for all of us to have made head and tail out of that crazy second test down there.
Yeah, and I completely agree. I think test series should be a minimum of three tests at least. But then again, I mean, we just had the ODI World Cup, and then India went to South Africa, played three T20s, and for some bizarre reason played three ODIs there. I mean, with no relevance to ODI cricket for the next 4 years now. It was just a bit surprising. Instead of that, they could easily have had an extra test match in that. But then I do understand that, you know, broadcasters seem to rule what we get shown on our TVs. They've got a certain number of T20 days that they want. There are a certain number of ODI days that they want. And yeah, for them to support test cricket, you have to tick the other boxes for them, which kind of dictates what is played and when it's played. It does make no sense at some times, but it's just the nature of the game and the beast that we've all got to live with.
Yeah, there's a lot of noise on social media at the moment about the amount of cricket that's currently going on. So ahead of this test series getting underway, I mean, you've got the Big Bash, which has just recently concluded in Australia. You've got the SA20. There's the Super Smash. There's another one, I can't remember what it's called, going on in Dubai.
The ILT20, yeah.
That's it, yeah. I mean, it's
very, and the Bangladesh Premier League as well, going on, BPL.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm sort of kind of getting to the point where I'm thinking that actually is too much. Someone needs to look at this, look at the calendar, and look at how we do it. I mean, as you say, you don't want India on the back of a World Cup going to play meaningless ODIs and T20s and stuff. You know, the calendar needs to be looked at, and the quality of what the paying public are watching, both at the stadium and on the TV. You know, I think it needs to be improved. You can't just have tournament after tournament after tournament. And it also encourages players, I think, to become more materialistic in chasing the buck and putting to one side, you know, the important stuff like test cricket or even just playing for their country.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these leagues did pop up after the last Future Tours program was sorted out. So I do kind of feel for the ICC, because they seem to get the brunt of all the criticism that goes around. I mean, how do you let this happen and how do you let that happen? But the SA T20 is a classic example. where it popped up after the Future Tours program had already been finalized, which meant that this tour of South Africa to New Zealand was coming right in the way of the SAT20, and they couldn't find a way to get around that, which is why you're getting a position where they're sending a second or a third string side to New Zealand. And don't get me wrong, there's been a lot of criticism in New Zealand. The fact that they've got to face a South African team, which is a second or a third ranked team, but I'm hoping that, you know, it's an evolving kind of world in the form of franchise cricket. I'm hoping that the ICC is going to look at it differently when they sit down to finalize the next Future Tours program, and kind of find windows and find pockets for things to come up and happen. And at the same time, I guess the key would be that we are quite blessed at the moment that there are cricketers of this generation who are still wanting to play Test cricket. The Joe Roots of the world, the Ben Stokes of the world, the Virat Kohlis of the world, the Rohit Sharmas of the world, all still hold Test cricket in high regard. And so do the Australians, some Pat Cummins and Mitchell Starc and all of them, they love playing Test cricket. But I'm not so sure that the next generation that's going to come through will be pushing as hard for Test cricket. Because if the players want to play it, the organizers will find a way to make that happen. But if the players don't show the level of interest that the current players are showing, then I'm just a bit skeptical about the future of Test cricket as a whole.
Yeah, I think also there's an onus of duty on the ICC to make Test cricket attractive, make people want to play it, because to me it is the most serious form of cricket. You know, you watch some of these franchise games and it's a bit like watching a testimonial. It's not really that serious. There's lots of joking and mucking about, even in the commentary box. But yet, when you watch a Test match, you know, when you see the guys coming down the steps all dressed in white with the Red Bull, and even the approach of the media, the commentators, is a lot more focused on, you know, the strength of the game than it is with the franchise stuff.
No, I do agree on that. And as I said to someone the other day, it takes you about a couple of hours at a pub to get over a T20 loss. It takes you a couple of weeks, or in terms of the ODI World Cup loss, it took me probably a couple of months to get over that. But to get over a Test series loss takes you a lot longer. And we've had two World Test Championships finals so far. The first one was between New Zealand and India. The second one between Australia and India. India lost both, and I still haven't got over both of those losses. So that just tells you, you remember Test matches for a lot longer, and those losses or those wins seem to mean a lot more than some of this T20 and ODI stuff. So yeah, I completely agree with you that it's the pinnacle form of the game.
Yeah, no, that's a very, very good point. I mean, we can sit and talk about great Test match performances, great Test matches. It's very difficult to start talking the same way about T20s or certainly franchise cricket. Just coming back to this India tour, not a criticism in the UK about England's preparation for this, with certainly some old season pros like Steve Harmison saying that you can't, you know, it's a serious business going on a 5-test tour of India, but yet the England team are turning up 3 days in advance without any warm-up games or acclimatization. Ben Stokes hit back on social media and said, oh, but we've got this training camp in Abu Dhabi for 11 days, which also includes days off to go and play golf and other things. What's the sense of opinion in India to England's preparation?
I think we're not surprised because England's known for doing a lot of quirky things when they go on tours. But I think one of the things that's been spoken about a lot is that there's a Lions tour currently in progress playing against the India A side. And we're quite surprised that none of the first 11 players or players who are on the brink of the first 11, like the newcomers in the side, you'd think they'd be part of that Lions team so that they'd get some experience of playing in Indian conditions, Indian pitches, Indian bowlers. So that's been the surprising aspect of it, because as you well know, that back in the day when you used to have tours, you'd have at least two practice games before the first test. Now, you don't have that luxury, but here was a classic situation where England were available for about 2 weeks, which they decided to spend in Abu Dhabi. A second England side was in India playing, but they didn't seem to take that advantage. I think one of the things I heard, one of the players, I think it was Ben Duckett, who actually said that, look, when we go to India, we're confined to our hotel rooms. We don't really get the freedom to go out and do stuff, which kind of puts added pressure on players. So which is why we chose to go to Abu Dhabi. That's what he's heard from the team management, which I can understand to some extent. But at the end of the day, if you ask yourself, how do I put myself in the best position to win? I think the answer is pretty clear that you try and get there as early as possible, try and get acclimatized, try and see what the local conditions are like, and try and prepare your best on those conditions rather than being in a foreign country and then traveling from there. So,
yeah, I read that. And it seems to me that with this current Basball setup, which has had, you know, it had initial success, but I think it's struggling in the last year or so. There might be too much emphasis on having a good time, enjoying yourself. And as you say, when Duckett says, oh, there's nothing to do. Well, if you'd said that to the previous generation, if you'd said that to Alistair Cook, if you said that to Graham Gooch, if you said that to Geoffrey Boycott, I'm pretty sure they'd give you a good shake and say, what are you talking about? It wouldn't have been on their priorities at all. And the other interesting thing that you say about the Lions being out there and being acclimatised and ready and performing well also, we've got the situation where Harry Brook has had to return for personal reasons. The shoe-in should have been, I think, someone that was already out there from that Lions team, not to drag Dan Lawrence from sunning himself in Abu Dhabi playing T20 cricket. You know, he's not even ready for the format, let alone the conditions. And even worse, if he goes there to carry drinks. I don't quite understand the logic.
Yeah, I was quite surprised because I saw Keaton Jennings getting a big 100 in that first innings and getting a decent amount of runs in the second knock as well. So I thought he'd be in a prime position. He's come to India, he's playing here, he's scored runs, and I do know that he's a top order batsman and Harry Brook is a middle order batsman. So that kind of probably is what shifted in Dan Lawrence's favor. You'd think that the next cap of the rank would be someone who's already here, playing here and doing well. But they seem to have thought otherwise. I think looking at the venues also, it's quite interesting because normally when big teams come to India, test matches are normally played at the big centers. So you have a test match in Mumbai, you'll have one in Chennai, maybe Bangalore, Delhi, Kolkata. But none of that this time, which is very, very interesting because, and I think this is part of BCCI's rotation policy as well, wherein all the centers had a lot of games during the ODI World Cup, which meant some of the smaller centers didn't actually get a game, and which is why you're having centers like Hyderabad and Vishakhapatnam, which is Vizag, Rajkot, Ranchi, and Dharamshala, were all getting a test match now. Very interesting to see how that's going to pan out as well.
They all make good TV, don't they? Dharamshala is a very pretty ground. I'm just sort of wondering if that might have had something to do with it, that, you know, it looks, and whenever you watch cricket now, particularly the franchise stuff, they spend an equal amount of time panning around the surroundings and the views and the area as much as on the cricket.
Well, I was there for the ODI World Cup and I spent about 8 days there this time, and beautiful, beautiful part of the world. It's just so serene and so magical that cricket's the last thing on your mind when you're there. But it's almost like, you know, when you know that this is such a pretty place and on top of that there's an actual cricket ground where international cricket's taking place. It's just the icing on the cake. So, yeah, I'm sure the players will enjoy their time there when they are in taking in the surroundings as well. Yeah.
Okay, right. I'm going to... what are your predictions for this series? What do you think... what's the result going to be out of the five tests? But also, who are the players that you're going to be looking at?
Talk from an Indian point of view. I think you play test cricket in India, you cannot look beyond India's two frontline spinners, which is Ravichandran Ashwin and Ravindra Jadeja. So both of those, I think, are going to have a terrific series at home. There's talk around India that they're only good on rank turners and stuff like that, but I think those two bowlers are very, very sharp, very, very witty, very capable of getting wickets on good batting surfaces as well. So I'd be looking forward to them from an Indian point of view. I'll also be looking at interest from India's fast bowlers, because whenever a team from, say, England, Australia comes and tours India, we find that the Indian seamers actually out-bowl the English seamers or the Australian seamers in Indian conditions. And this time, after a long, long time, Bumrah is going to be playing a full test series. He's fit, he's raring to go. So I'd be very keen to look at how Bumrah and Siraj go in Indian conditions as well. From the batting, it's so good to see Virat Kohli back in form, you know, because we all went through this lull along with him, fans of Virat Kohli, who have so used to seeing him turn up and score runs for fun, went through a miserable 2-year period where he couldn't, he kept finding new ways of getting out and couldn't get 100 in that time. But he's back, he's hungry, so he'll be someone with the bat that we'll be looking forward to. And not to forget a young Yashasvi Jaiswal as well, who's had a fantastic start to his test career. But India's got its own issues, which are relating to the wicket-keeping side of things. In South Africa, we saw KL Rahul with the gloves in the two test matches. But in home conditions, where it's going to spin and spit and bounce, I don't know if KL Rahul wants to keep in Indian conditions and then go out to bat again. So they've got a little bit of a juggling act to do with their 11 as to who comes in, if, because KL Rahul should make the team just purely as a batsman. But if he doesn't want to keep, then obviously you've got to get in someone like a Bharat, who actually got a 100 against the Lions and saved the game the other day for India. So there's going to be a bit of a balancing act, but it'll be very... So the two spinners, Ashwin and Jadeja, would be key for me, along with Kohli with the bat. So these three will be from India. Question for you, though. Who are we going to look out from England? Because I was really looking forward to seeing Harry Brooke go, but obviously he's gone back home, he's not coming. And I was also very surprised to find that Cricinfo actually doesn't even have a picture of Shoaib Bashir on his profile in Cricinfo. Uh-huh. So I'm really looking forward to how these two young spinners are going to go with Jack Leach over there.
I've got a worrying feeling about what's going to happen out here. You know, obviously an England fan, I want them to do well, but I'm concerned about Ben Stokes and whether he's recovered enough from the surgery on his knee to perform in such a high-level test series. Jimmy Anderson is now 146 years old, and how's he going to go in this? I mean, he looked fine through the summer, but he's definitely, to me, seems to be past his peak. I'm wondering, will this be a tour too far for him? But, you know, let's see. But that's what I'm watching. And then the batting. I mean, Zach Crawley's turned it around this summer. I mean, he was under huge pressure going into the Ashes series. You know, he performed brilliantly. We can all remember him hitting Pat Cummings for four on the very first ball of the test, in the first test. But, you know, Harry Brooke is a huge loss, and it creates pressure. I'm glad to see Ben Folkes back in the picture. I hope he takes the gloves and they use Johnny Bairstow as a bat, because they're going to need some kind of batting strength. And if Bairstow, as we have all seen in the past, puts his mind to it, he can bat properly. And also, Ben Folkes is no slouch. I mean, he's got a few big innings, test innings to his name now as well. And I think he's just... arguably the best wicketkeeper in the world, certainly better, in my opinion, than Johnny Bairstow. It would have been interesting if folks had had the gloves in the Ashes rather than Bairstow. But a bigger concern is, this is the first Test cricket England have played for 6 months. You know, are they going to be ready? You know, what have they been doing to kind of really prepare for this? You know, fun in the sun in Abu Dhabi is all well and good, but I mean, this is a serious business. This is as tough a tour as you're going to get. I've got a question mark about their preparation, their mindset, and also, you know, have they picked the right team? And I certainly think that overlooking Keaton Jennings and maybe one or two of the other Lions that are already out there might come back and bite them on the backside.
Yeah, I mean, look, apart from Root, nobody's actually been successful in the subcontinent. And I know that they haven't played a lot of test cricket in the subcontinent, but Duckett, when he came here, was a different player. I know there's a lot of water that's flown under the bridge since then, and he's become a much tighter, much more better, much more confident player. But still, he'll find it very difficult. The second thing is, the reason I was looking forward to Harry Brook was the fact that he seems to be the only player there who is naturally aggressive, who plays proper cricketing shots and still scores at run a ball without having all the reverse sweeps and the switch hits and all of those things. You don't see him doing a lot of that, but he still seems to find a way to play proper cricketing shots and play good cricketing shots and still score quickly the best ball way. I'm not sure how successful they'll be if they try the same approach on turning pitches against Jadeja and Ashwin, and even, in fact, against Bumrah and Siraj. But time will tell us how that goes. But apart from Root, I don't think there's anyone in that lineup that the Indians will be looking at and saying, geez, we need to get him out quickly. But, yeah, and with the bowling as well, you know, we've seen this in the past, that England normally turns up with one spinner and then a whole lot bunch of others who they try and rotate through the games. Like the last time they came, I think it was just Moeen Ali, who was the lead spinner. This time we've got Rehan Ahmed, we've got Bashir, and we've got Hartley. But I don't know if the Indians would give them a second look. I think there are better spinners in the Indian nets that Indian batters faced on a regular basis. And with no disrespect, it's not got nothing to do with they're just too young and too raw, which is why I was surprised that somebody like a Dawson got looked over, even though he's got a phenomenal record playing county cricket. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. They rate this guy, Bashir, really highly. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he goes. And look, he might surprises and take a fifer in his first outing, but yeah, but it's going to be very interesting to see how that goes.
So what's your prediction over five matches?
I don't think England will win the game. I think they'll be lucky to draw a game. I think it's going to be either a 3-0 or a 4-0 series win to India. That's my prediction.
Wow. It's hard to disagree with that, to be honest. Yeah. Let's hope England can prove everybody wrong. Rahul, fantastic to see you, and go and enjoy that sunshine. I'll go back to fighting with the wind and the rain over here in the UK, but great to see you, and many thanks for giving us your time.
Thanks, Darren. Cheers, mate.
Thanks to Rahul for his thoughts. They're a very interesting conversation. And it was a fast-moving feast this week. So we recorded that literally minutes before Virat Kohli announced that he was going to miss the first two tests due to personal reasons. Quite interesting to see on social media the different approaches taken by Indian fans reacting to Harry Brook's withdrawal from the England side. Some quite nasty comments going on there, but this has become kind of par for the course from some of the less enlightened people across the Indian subcontinent who seem to populate too many cricket chats and Facebook pages and the rest of it with some pretty stupid stuff. When Kohli announced his decision, it was a completely different approach from these guys, and it was all very supportive, and King Kohli and all the rest of it. They just need to dial themselves in a little bit.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Now, if Harry Brook's departure from the side wasn't bad enough, there was more unfortunate news that happened on Tuesday, as we found out that young Somerset player Bashir had not yet been granted a visa by the Indian authorities. All very, very strange and should really not have happened in my book. I don't quite understand that the application was put in on December the 11th when the England squad was announced, and still to this day his visa has not been cleared, but all the others were cleared and travelled from Abu Dhabi on to India. Bashir has gone back to the UK now to get this all sorted out. There are high hopes that this can all be put in place by the weekend, but I can't imagine the highs and lows that he's been through these last few weeks of being so young and being called up to a test tour of India, only to then be rebuffed to watch as all of his mates go off while he's still sorting out the paperwork. But hopefully this can all be taken care of. Ben Stokes has said there was never a chance England would boycott the first test against India because of the delay with Shoaib Bashir's visa. The uncapped Somerset spinner, who is of Pakistani heritage, is out of contention for the test, which has started today because of this issue. Stokes said he was devastated for the 20-year-old, and he admitted he had floated the idea of a boycott amongst the team, but it was tongue-in-cheek. As a leader, as a captain, when one of your teammates is affected by something like that, you do get a bit emotional, said Stokes. Is Ian Dury, hit me with your rhythm stick. You're listening to Phoenix FM.
In the deserts of Sudan and the gardens of Japan, from Milan to Yucatan, every woman's, every man. Hit me with your rhythm stick. Hit me, hit me. Je t'adore, ich liebe dich. Hit me, hit me, hit me. Hit me with your rhythm stick. Hit me slowly, hit me quick. Hit me, hit me, hit me. The wilds of Borneo and the vineyards of Bordeaux, Eskimo, Arapaho, move their body to and fro. Hit me with your rhythm stick, hit me, hit me, das ist gut, sehr fantastic. Hit me, hit me, hit me. Hit me with your rhythm stick. It's nice to be a lunatic. Hit me, hit me, hit me. Yeah.
radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
I am John Charmy, inviting you to join me here on Phoenix FM on Saturday afternoons for Phoenix Sport. The top local, national and international sports stories, plus live scores, results, reports, interviews, quiz questions and my sporting anniversaries. And lots of great music too. That's Phoenix Sport, every Saturday from 3 till 6pm here on Phoenix 98 FM.
Tune into the Sunday sessions on Phoenix FM every Sunday morning, 10 till 12, with me, Kevlar. I'll be bringing you tracks from local artists. Most of those tracks are recorded down at our open mic, which takes place every Monday at 8pm at the Essex Arms in Brentwood, right next door to Brentwood Station. Come along and just watch, or if you're a singer or songwriter, come along and sing us a song.
Sing, sing, sing.
It's me, Michelle Ward. A prawn cocktail.
I love a prawn cocktail.
I'm always rambling. What is the mayor's chain called?
Chain.
In fact, I never stop talking. And I rubbed, basically, all of the skin off the inside of my thigh. You can answer my question of the day. I think men go through the menopause from about the ages of 18 to 65. And after that, the diet. Fantastic guests and super music. What am I lacking in the diet? Humour, really?
Yes.
Weekdays 10 till 1.
The February issue of the Cricketer magazine is out now. We have a full preview of England men's test series in India with George DeBell, Jonathan Trott, Graham Fowler, Vic Marks and Mike Selby. Nick Friend looks at the relentlessness of today's domestic schedule and talks to modern cricketers who find it unsustainable. We also have David Gower reviewing England's one-day matches in the Caribbean before Christmas, and the former West Indies fast bowler Colin Croft comes off his long run to explain why West Indies players take the franchise buck. That's in the February issue of the Cricketer magazine, out now.
Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome back to 98 Not Out with me, Darren Mutu. Cricket news and chat every Thursday night between 6 and 7 on Phoenix FM. Let's head to the other side of the world now and down to Australia. Australia are in the middle of a series against the West Indies, and there's quite an amusing story that's come out about Glenn Maxwell, who says apparently he is embarrassed but set to avoid sanction after an incident in Adelaide. And the all-rounder is back in training ahead of after being briefly taken to hospital last Friday after a night out in Adelaide. AAP says that Maxwell played a round of golf through the heat of Friday. It is very hot down there at the moment. Before attending a gig where he was drinking, he passed out when in the green room after the show and was taken to the emergency room of a hospital via ambulance, but was later released without being admitted. Hot sunshine and heavy drinking, they don't go well together.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
And staying in Australia, Brisbane Heat, congratulations. They are the BBL champions after beating Sydney Sixers at the Sydney Cricket Ground by 54 runs. Particular congratulations to Billericay Cricket Club and Essex County Cricket Club star Paul Walter, who is now being known these days as Tall Paul, who was a big part of the Heat's success this year and has gained himself somewhat of a cult figure status. So well done, Mr. Walter. Very, very glad to see you succeeding like that. And looking forward to seeing you back on home shores and in Essex colours in the new season. Now, another news that I know will have the grumbler jumping up and down in excitement. The fixtures are out for this year's edition of the 100. Two times women champions and current men's holders Oval Invincibles will host Birmingham Phoenix in the opening game of the 2024 edition. This is the fourth edition of the 100 Ball Tournament. It starts on the 23rd of July and runs until the final, which again will be held at Lord's on the 18th of August. Women's holders Southern Braves start against London Spirit on the 24th of July. The eliminators between sides who finish second and third in the group will be on the 17th of August at the Kia Oval. The tournament will clash with the England men's test against West Indies at Edgbaston, which is due to start on the 26th of July. but the women's players have a clear schedule. Now, last week, the England and Wales Cricket Board announced £100,000 investment in each of the eight women's teams, with the top salary increasing from £31,250 up to £50,000. As in previous editions, all match days will be double headers, with the women's games preceding the men's fixture each day. Right, I need to take a deep breath. Nothing here to see, just a kill out me, trying to cut some tea, trying to figure it out. Nothing better to do when I'm stuck on you, I'm still on me, trying to figure it out. Hi, it's Darren Mutu. Join me on Phoenix FM for Reggae Revival, the only place where you'll hear old-school roots rock, reggae, dub plates, lovers rock. Make sure you don't miss it every Wednesday, 10 until midnight, only on Phoenix 98 FM.
It's Reggae Revival with Darren Mutu on Phoenix FM.
Yes, if you can't get enough of me, there's my other show on Phoenix. Wednesdays, 10 till midnight, Revival, old school or old man's reggae, as my son keeps telling me. Reggae Revival, Wednesdays. Make sure you catch it.
What? You're a disc jockey? What's that?
All right, back to the cricket. And Lords has announced the fixtures for 2024. There's a whole long list of them, but I'll just pick out the ones that I think are more interesting. And the Schools Open T20 Finals Day will be held on the 28th of June. The British Universities and College Sport Finals will be on the 2nd of July for the men and on the 3rd of July for the women. There's also the MCC Foundation National Hubs Finals Day. That's on the 20th of July. And the ECB Junior Club Final on the 14th of September, and that one that's always worth heading along to, the Village Cup Final, is held on the following day, the 15th of September. So lots of inclusive stuff there, and Lords has come under fire over the last few years of not being open to wider audiences and wider people that are involved in the game. But having said all that, the traditional and controversial fixtures of Cambridge versus Oxford and Eton against Harrow remain on the calendar. Those games will be played in May.
This is Phoenix FM.
Right, whizzing around the counties, and all-rounder Ben Green has signed a 12-month contract extension with Somerset until the end of the 2025 season. The 26-year-old was the club's leading wicket-taker during last season's title-winning Vitality Blast campaign with 30. He joined the Somerset Academy in 2013 and went on to make his debut for the county 3 years later. Over to Edgbaston, and Warwickshire have named wicket-keeper Alex Davis as the club's new captain. The 29-year-old replaces Will Rhodes, who stepped down after 4 years at the helm in November. Davis, who joined the Bears from Lancashire ahead of the 2022 season on a three-year contract, has also signed a new deal with Warwickshire, which keeps him at Edgbaston until 2026. Former Worcestershire captain Joe Leach has extended his contract with the club to the end of the 2025 season. The 33-year-old all-rounder's previous deal was due to expire this summer. Leach took his 450th first-class wicket in 2023 as the Pairs won promotion to the County Championship Division 1, finishing second in Durham. It's a new era at the club, and to have the opportunity to contribute for at least the next couple of years is really exciting, he said. Kent has announced Jack Leaning has signed a new contract extension and has been named the club's new vice-captain. Leaning, 30... already, will stay with the Canterbury-based side until at least the end of the 2026 season. The former Yorkshire batting all-rounder joined Kent in 2019 and will deputise for Daniel Bell Drummond in the Championship team and for Sam Billings in the limited overs side. He said, "I'm extremely excited to see what the future holds at Kent. I was quick to make sure that I could commit to as many years as I could at this club going forward." And heading down to South Africa, where the Men's Under-19 World Cup is underway. And remember, there is some Essex involvement. England Under-19 tomorrow take on the West Indies Under-19 side. The game gets underway at 8 o'clock UK time. And look out for Essex youngsters Charlie Allison, Noah Fain and Luke Benkenstein, all who are looking to shine at the World Cup. And that's it for another show. It's whizzed by tonight. My thanks to Rahul Patil for joining me to talk about India versus England. And remember, vote for 19. No doubt there's still time as best cricket podcast of the year. I'll be back next Thursday at 6 o'clock. I'll catch you then. Playing us out tonight is Joe Jackson and Stepping Out. So
On the hour, across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM. News.